Welcome to IoT Real Talk. No fluff, no filler, just real pros talking about real programs, real challenges, and real results. What if I told you one of the most powerful IoT applications isn't in factories, fleets, or cities, but in consumer kitchens? In this episode of IoT Real Talk, we sit down with Ben Jeffries, CEO of ATEC Global, to learn how IoT-enabled cook stoves are cutting carbon emissions, improving health, and unlocking new economic value for families using wood-burning stoves in Asia and Africa. Stay tuned for a surprising and inspiring look at how IoT is changing the climate and changing lives one cook stove at a time. Hey, welcome to the pod. I'm your co-host, Susanna Song, Chief Marketing Officer at Aeris.
And I'm John Connett, Chief Product Officer at Aeris.
Well, John, I've been looking forward to this conversation for a few weeks because who doesn't love a good human interest story and an IoT for good story?
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, this is an interesting one.
Yeah, lots to unpack. Let's bring in our guest. So Ben, welcome. And I have to ask, so what's cooking?
Oh, as a father of three children, I very much appreciate a good dad joke.
Yes, there you go.
Lovely to meet you guys. Greetings from over in Australia this morning. So lovely to have on and excited for this conversation.
Yeah, let's start from the beginning. Tell us about ATEC and exactly what is your mission?
So ATEC started about a decade ago. We're coming up just on a decade. And we very much wanted to tackle this pretty substantial problem that still affects around about half the population in the world, which is cooking with traditional materials such as particularly wood and charcoal. It still affects about half the world's population. It's one of the leading causes of death for women. Premature death for women as well, around 3.5 million deaths per year, linked to sort of smoke inhalation. It's like having a pack of cigarettes every day. But what we saw with it as well is it actually had this huge carbon impact on the climate. And what we were particularly interested in was to go, okay, well, if we can effectively measure and then verify those carbon emission reductions that we could achieve by taking people from cooking with wood or charcoal and getting them across to a modern cooking solution that's sort of zero or low carbon, we could actually not just sort of solve some of those other problems but that I mentioned before, but unlock around a gigaton of carbon market value into these households. And just to put that in context, so one gigaton, that's about 2% of global emissions, which is actually more than the global airline industry. So very much trying to work on a problem, and this is, in our view, a very technically solvable problem, which we'll talk to today, to be able to sort of realize this value for the environment, but then also for these households across Asia and Africa.
Wow, that's very interesting. I think the possibly the most fascinating aspect of this business for me is how you're really tapping into the carbon credits market. And I think this might be a new concept for a lot of the listeners out there. Maybe just spend a minute and explain kind of what a carbon credit is and kind of what's the business model there? Like, how does it relate to your business and ultimately affect your mission that you described?
Yeah, good question, John. So, I mean, if I take an example, say, John, where are you based?
I'm in San Jose, California.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so say you've got a meeting in New York you need to go to. Okay, it's a very important meeting. We need to do that for business. You're going to take a flight. Right now, there's not sustainable aviation fuel widely available, where if you wanted to do that without an impact on the environment, there's just not a choice. Okay, so what's the next best solution is to go, okay, well, if I have to take this flight, I can't do a video call or whatever, it's super important. The next best solution is then to go, okay, well, I can at least reduce the equivalent amount of emissions of my flight somewhere else in the world to at least minimize the impact. It's not as good as the end solution, but we need to get this step by step. And that's effectively what carbon credits are, it's sort of, if you think of a ledger, you've kind of got an emission on one side and then you've got a reduction on the other side and you have a net zero effect between the two. And I think that's kind of the first sort of layer of it. But I think the more important sort of goal or mission overall is around being able to measure, verify, and then trade and monetize all carbon emissions across the world, be they emissions or be they reductions, and then have a market. And I think this is, in our view at least, the most fundamental step towards actually achieving our sort of climate and goals globally over the next 20 years.
Wow, very interesting. And how does that relate with your business specifically? So, I mean, you sell stoves. And so it sounds like, you know, bringing that really sophisticated ledger, if you will, to a much broader audience. We get the stove side, but who's buying these credits, and how does that kind of transaction interplay here?
Yeah, so right now it's a sort of B2B style transaction. So ATEC has an agreements with the Swiss government, who have a climate target under the Paris Climate Agreement. So that's in legislation; they have to achieve this. So we have the Swiss government as a partner. We have ENGIE, which is a French multinational energy company. They have their own net zero goals. We have other partners around the world as well. A new partnership coming in, which is effectively for like Danone and Michelin. So again, French multinational companies. And they're looking to, you know, be responsible corporate citizens, reduce their impact on the environment from their work and at a government level, at a legislative level. So they're looking to effectively acquire these sort of emission reductions, these carbon credits, to ensure that they're on track towards hitting certain goals that they're either set at a legislative level or set at a voluntary level. And there's a bit of a mix of both. Ultimately, where we want to get to, and that goes back to that ledger, John, is, and your flight, is we want to have technology, and we're pretty much there now using IoT, where John can buy a carbon credit freeze flight directly off a woman who's decarbonizing her cooking in Malawi, for example, or in Bangladesh. And so you can just sort of jump on your phone and go, okay, I need 2 tons or whatever the case is, boom, boom, boom. And you're actually paying that directly to that household. And that's the ultimate that we're working.
Amazing. And that's, does that offset the actual device, like the cooking equipment, or is that like a revenue stream that person is now, that home cook is now tapping into?
Yeah, so we do a mix of both because, you know, the device, it's an IoT device. It's a more sophisticated device. So it's not crazy expensive, but, you know, it's for someone in a country like a Malawi or a Bangladesh or a Nepal, et cetera, it's still a pretty big investment. So what we do is we effectively sort of bring in or calculate a bit of that future carbon and bring down the upfront cost, so it's quite accessible because, you know, obviously if you're cooking with wood or charcoal, you're typically a low-income household. So that becomes accessible. And then we integrate and bring in the payments based on their actual IoT data overall. And I think that's really the role. This is something I think the sector's wanted to do for a long time. I mean, carbon markets have been around for, about 20 years now. But you've never had that level of granularity at the data level to know who's actually reduced emissions versus other things. So that's the role IoT is playing, is we can now do, you know, basically down to the watt or down to the gram of carbon, exactly what's happening, and then monetize that to the benefit of these households.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I've only ever heard of carbon credits being traded like company to company, like oil company offsetting with, you know, like a solar, like industrial size, you know, solar deployment or something like that. And this is really what it sounds like. It's really democratizing kind of this market space, which is amazing, both technologically, but also from a obviously from a social good standpoint as well. And really, it's fascinating because it really brings to play a lot of the really key IoT trends out there, right? Like edge compute, you know, data proliferation, you know, more insightful decisions and business models enabled by data, and of course, pervasive connectivity. So, very fascinating business you have there.
Yeah, I mean, it's super fascinating. I have no trouble getting out of bed in the morning and work. That definitely helps. And I think, and I mean, hopefully we can overlay a bit of a video of some of the IoT data and the world map view and how you guys can run through that while we're talking. And what it really shows is that, you know, we can track all these various emissions across the world, and we can't just track them. We can then verify them, or emission reductions, sorry, verify them, monetize them directly into households. This is all the stuff we've been talking about for, you know, the last 10 years. It's like, this is what we want Web3 to be. We want it to be decentralized. We want it to be verifiable on ledgers, et cetera. I think carbon markets with IoT is, in my view, probably the best use case example of Web3 out there. So it's brilliant. It's unlocking this huge amount of value that effectively sits off the ledger currently at the moment.
Yeah, you just need to integrate it with Bitcoin now some way.
Well, we've got ideas. We're starting off with so the first ledger we're going to publish to is the Hedera Guardian Network. So if you've heard of HBAR,
oh, wow. you're really taking this thing seriously.
We're not just talking the talk.
John's like, it's nice to have, but actually they're doing it.
I was going to say though, I feel like Bitcoin needs some carbon offset.
An interesting one that we're looking at and kind of lies in with Bitcoin is to go, okay, where are those emissions at? It's at the power, the data center level. So again, you know, ideally, you run a data center on sort of renewables 100% of the time. But, you know, there's going to be downtimes, et cetera. Maybe you need natural gas or whatever. So doing what's called a wrapped power purchase agreement, which is where effectively you offset those emissions, is the next best thing you can do. So that's ideally what we want to do. And then we want to take that money from that Bitcoin transaction and then pay that directly to a household who's then reducing those emissions to give you a net zero Bitcoin or a net zero whatever you're developing from there.
Amazing. Even the Bitcoin bros can get in on the action.
Bitcoin bros.
All right. Give us some numbers here. This is a fascinating market. We'd love to hear. Sounds like you got some interesting charts. Well, I think we can throw up on the pod post. But how big is this market? Like how you've been around for 10 years? Like what's kind of the scope and scale here?
Yeah, so we're very much, you know, to get us to this point, and I think, John, as you know, when it comes to IoT, when you're not just dealing in bits but atoms, like it takes a while to build it all together and get it right. So today we've impacted about 100,000 people globally with our products across the world, but we're sort of on a 10x pathway right now for that. So we're looking in the next sort of 2 years to hit about 1 million people in total. And really the sky's the limit from there. We're talking about a problem that still impacts 4 billion people across the world. So going back to that, in that Google kind of view, I think it's like work on problems that are greater than 1 billion people or something like that. Then yeah, this is a big one that we can take.
Yeah, the market potential is massive as well, right? $20 to $40 billion per year in value just in those two continents, Asia and Africa.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's just in this one vertical of decarbonizing cooking. And obviously what we then want to do is to go, okay, well, what other value can we bring to the table? Because, you know, you're using IoT to monitor or to verify these emission reductions, but then effectively you've opened up a payment gateway, which can then sort of receive other types of incentives and benefits or work from, et cetera. So again, going back to that whole DeFi decentralization view, this is a really good way to bring into that equation a lot of the world that, you know, has had very little sort of value for them to them so far.
Yeah, what I find very fascinating about this use case is the traditional carbon markets always relied on just kind of assumptions, guesses if anything, but not real data or proof. But what you're doing at ATEC is really using like high fidelity IoT data to then be able to kind of, you're able to prove and get all that data audited for trustworthy carbon credits, if you will.
Yeah, Cesar, exactly. And I think, you know, if you have low integrity data and you combine that with a profit motive, you're going to have problems because at the end of the day, the profit motive will override the integrity. And so you need to have some level of hard code immutability to the data integrity. So traditionally how it was done in the past was like, you sort of, you know, you do a 100,000 stoves and then you go visit a few and you're like, oh yeah, they're using it. Great. Let's extrapolate that to the whole. So it's called a sampling basis and you can do it at this 90-10 confidence interval. And it all sounds very professional, which if you were impartial researchers, it would be, I'd be much more comfortable with it. But we're talking a multi-billion dollar market here. So you can't rely on good intentions when there's a profit motive on the table. So we're building out the infrastructure. We're referring it to more like immutable carbon. So effectively, the device is encrypted, digitally signed. So you get the data there. It then sits as an integrity level, goes, which obviously you guys are helping us with, goes straight to our server, which is with an independent verifier. And we literally can't touch the data anywhere along the line. It's then effectively tokenized onto a ledger. It can be publicly viewed at all times. The only way, there's always going to be this risk of, you know, low quality projects, greenwashing claims, et cetera, in this market. And there should always be a high level of scrutiny. The only answer is to have the data and the tech there that says, here it all is. There's nothing to hide. And that's the only way we can really scale this.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So there's definitely a security and like a data integrity element to this as well. I mean, imagine there's actually, you could actually see how that actually could be something exploitable by a malicious actor even for some type of market manipulation. Like if I'm trying to manipulate the carbon market, for example, like if you're big enough, going in there and screwing with the data coming out can increase or decrease. Because are you aggregating all these things together? Like ATEC, you know, the ATEC platform is driving this many carbon units, or is it literally on a per device basis?
So it's on a per device basis. Okay. And that ultimate move, which I have an article coming out on this soon around how we can build immutable carbon credits, is to effectively, you would call us like a project developer, that you separate the project data and the project developer 100% from each other. And I think that's the only solution we can get to in the long term. Because John, for example, if I have a bad quarter, you know, my profit's down or whatever the case is, and I can sit in there and I can go in and tweak a number and suddenly I've become 20% more profitable, whatever the case is. Now, we need to remove that potential for bad actors in the sector. There needs to be that complete separation of data and developer, because there's just, I mean, if we're going to realize this potential, we need to attract capital and we need to generate revenue, and et cetera. So that's all good things, but we can't self-regulate. We've shown in the past that that's caused way too many problems. And this to me is the fundamental issue, is the merging of data and developer.
Yeah. I think that's the case with every market, by the way.
Yeah.
Not unique to you guys, but you know, being that we are a technology podcast, would love to hear a little bit more, get a little deeper on. So how are you guys actually implementing this? You know, from an IoT device kind of standpoint. So you've got, so what kind of walk us through here? So you've got, you're sending out the stove, right? Or it's like a hot plate or something more specific than that, or
electromagnetic induction plate. So
okay. So you're sending it out. It's got a SIM card in it, right? Yep. You're sending that out to somebody buys it. Like how do they even get it? It's like in a retail store?
Yeah. So they that's part of what we see is that sort of confirmation of desire or demand, sorry, for product, is they do pay something for the stove. We think that's important. So be it through a retail outlet or through a distributor, like in these parts of the world, you have what are called last mile distributors who are sort of more sort of, you know, door to door or people oriented. So they get the product through that channel. So we manufacture in Asia, ship it across to the market. We have your global SIM card in there. So we can basically, any market we go to in the world, up it pops and we'll be able to see that on the dashboard. And then we can effectively track every watt of usage time, et cetera. And then that data point then goes into an overall project design for the carbon project, which is independently verified and audited. And so that data point then feeds into that, and that basically calculates the amount of carbon credits.
And this is going to sound weird, but do you guys do anything to prevent like fraud? Like what if I bought a bunch of these hot plates and put them in a building and I created a hot pot or a hot plate mining factory.
Exactly. Yeah. And we are a carbon nutter, particularly I was thinking this the other day with the work we're doing with the team at Hedera. We're effectively a carbon data mining. Like we're doing this tokenization, and instead of burning energy such as to solve an algorithm such as Bitcoin's doing, we're effectively we're actually calculating, okay, well, how their mine as such is their cooking, but then what did they used to use previously, and that's the value creation as such. So that sort of process that we sort of take it through.
And do you guys are you tracking physical location too while you're at it as well?
So we have all data coordinates on where they are in the world. So you can basically, and this is part of what we do with our buyers, is they get access to our DMRV data platform where they can see that data in real time. So you can literally zoom into every single household, obviously with a protection around private information, et cetera, but you can sort of see exactly where it is.
General location, not a...
Triangulation rather than sort of exact GPS.
Yeah.
That gives you an idea of exactly how it's going, et cetera. So again, that radical transparency that IoT can bring. We've been closing an investment round recently and, radical transparency is both the best thing and the hardest thing about what we do. Because they
have all the data.
They've got all the data. They're sitting there going, oh, what about it? Run this query?
Yeah, yeah. Like, cool.
I really hope this stacks up, and thankfully it did.
Well, as we wrap up, Ben, I love this story, and I think folks in the IoT world, we don't always associate, the good that could really come out of IoT deployments. And I thank you so much for spending as part of your day with us. As I know you are far away, 15 hours ahead in time zone. So just even getting the three of us together in studio, I know wasn't easy, and I appreciate your willingness to join us on the pod.
No, thank you very much, guys. And a huge thank you to you guys and the team. Like, we literally couldn't do it without your tech. So, big thank you. And we'll keep popping those data points onto the map and, keep doing the good job.
Very cool. Yeah. Good Godspeed with your mission there. That sounds like changing the world and making money while you're doing it. That's sounds like a great, great endeavor.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks again to Ben Jeffries, CEO of ATEC, and thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you have feedback about today's podcast or you have a topic or a guest in mind, please contact us at podcast@aris.com. Until next time, I'm Susanna Song.
And I'm John Connett, and this is IoT Real Talk.
From all of us at Aris, thank you for listening to IoT Real Talk. We hope you'll join us again for more real stories from real practitioners shaping the future of IoT. Tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube, or visit aris.com/IoT podcast.